such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Father Tom Coyce here with you today again. And the reward room is fully functional. We're ready to put anyone that we deem worthy of the reward room, which is a new addition. On the other side of the room, we have the punishment room, of course, and no one likes to go into the punishment room, but it is necessary. The danger is that we might all be thrown into the punishment room, but punishment rooms help us, and they correct our faults, which is a part of human nature, right?
You just wrinkled my brain.
Yeah, yeah, that's the way it is, and especially on Wednesdays here on the Winds of Change. I'm afraid I'm gonna try to test your brains with a bunch of philosophy. This is the little warning, because those who are not accustomed to philosophical thinking may be driven a little crazy. Yeah, you don't know what's going to come, but sometimes the philosophical distinctions that are necessary to make and the implications of one thought as it leads to another, this is what the mind is made for. And there is a certain kind of craving. And I pray that we all can develop the right kind of hunger, that hunger for the craving of wisdom, of knowledge, of understanding. And let us be clear right off at the bat that being smart by today's standards is usually what us Catholics have qualified or characterized as knowledge. Knowledge being to know a lot of things that you're good at, either Trivial Pursuits or SAT scores, passing the exams that are all a part of a young person's educational career. But I want everybody to accept the fact that as we delineate and as we try to teach all of our young people who get confirmed about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, that knowledge is different than wisdom. Knowledge is sort of like a prerequisite. You need to know some facts. The way I like to think of it is knowledge is our memorization of facts. Of course, you can have knowledge for a little while and forget about it. But basically, when you memorize something, you have it. That is part of your knowledge database, shall we say. But you can have a very large knowledge database, but lack a lot of the wisdom that comes from the interplay of those, that data, that knowledge, with so many other things. And so that being said, I want to explore a very popular, and I want to say this at the outset, a sincere attempt at trying to guide our church through difficult times by Father Mallon. Some of you might know that name. He's a young Canadian priest, and he's the author of a book called Divine Renovation, trying to put our church back on the right track, shall we say, if you would use that terminology, but to his terminology would be to create more. Yeah, it is going to begin, because I'm going to lead you, my listeners, into a dialogue with the,
wow,
the amazing. Yeah.
Even, you just wrinkled my brain, man.
You're about to have your brain wrinkled, and the dialogue that I'm going to have with Father Mahlon is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name exactly right, Mallon, Father Mahlon. And I feel I want to dialogue with him because I see some of the sincere wisdom points that he's trying to share, but I feel a bit like an older brother who has to teach a younger brother to be careful and go deeper and watch out for some of the poison, shall we say, or some of the misguided wisdom, I guess you could call foolishness. So there's a strong following for his plan of renovating the church, and I want to take some of the salient points, especially. There's a document that pastors were asked to share with their parishioners to meditate on some of the many points. He has eight chapters in his book, and there's eight words, which are basically emotions, upon which he tries to elaborate. And as what I want to do is I want to point out some of the wisdom bits that are there. But what is also very important is to point out how oftentimes the ambiguity in his writing or speaking, his propositions, as it were, the ambiguity in those propositions are dangerous, because obviously ambiguity opens itself for various interpretations. And we need to be able to see where one interpretation will go wrong, whereas perhaps another interpretation will lead us in a right direction. Okay, am I got it? Do I got you? I hope I have your attention now. If I don't have your attention, I'm going to play for you this amazing song. I must admit, I don't have many of her albums or CDs. Well, I don't even think we have CDs anymore. I don't have her downloaded too much. But there's a very popular artist with a song that reminds me of the theme that I want to share with you as I try to have this dialogue with Father Mahlon. And that theme is the false dichotomies that are present in some of the what is called wisdom of the ages, or the divine renovation, I'll call it the divine renovation movement, for lack of any other term. And I see in these approach some false dichotomies, where things are pitted against each other, and they're thrusted apart, and they're in a battle for who's more important, which is primary, what's secondary.
Whoa.
Yeah. And
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, and if that wrinkles your brain, here, I have to share with you. Let's see if I can pull this up. This is a song that you may or may not know. It goes like
when
this.
You said you needed space.
Do you know who this is?
When you come around again and say, baby, I miss you and I swear I'm gonna change. Trust me, remember how that lasted for a day. I say, I hate you, we break up, you call me, I love you. Ooh, 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 ooh. We called it off again last night, but ooh, 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 this time.
Okay, here, Now, that's Taylor Swift, for those of you who are not Swift enough to understand these modern icons of art. Anyways, I didn't know who it was until I listened to the song. Anyways, but it's a apropos song to meditate on as I shift from the world of romance, as obviously the song is a passionate song about a girl who's finally trying to break up with her boyfriend. And of course, what I find interesting in the song is that she has to emphasize so very strongly how they're never, ever, ever, never, ever, never, ever going to get back together again. Which, what does that imply? I think what it implies is, of course, how people go through ups and downs in relationships. And people will break up and come back together again, break up and come back together again, break up and come back together again. And it is part of life. We got to admit it, right? Obviously. But at one point, either she or he has to say fini. And we're never, ever, ever going to get back together again. She's trying to convince herself as much as anything in that song. Because she knows that pull back together again is going to be very hard to resist. And so the reason I share that tidbit of music with you is because the theme that I want you to keep in mind as I share some of the salient quotes from Father Malin's work from his very popular book, Divine Renovation, is that there is a subtle trying to split up things that should belong together and that shouldn't be split up. you know how at weddings we always say, until death do you part, what God has joined, let no man put asunder. Now, obviously, we know that that doesn't always happen. We all know that many people break up, and we can understand that. We could swallow that in different ways. There is that powerful teaching of our Catholic faith that is called the indissolubility of marriage. And when people's vows are done away with, shall we say, a vow is the promises you make to God, and so the Church feels obligated to be a part of that. Because there are vows, the Church is part of it, and that's why we have annulments. And I've talked about that before, and it's a very important topic, but that's not my main emphasis here today. I just want you to realize that that phrase, "What God has put together, let no man separate," can also be applied to various aspects of truth. What God has put together, let no man put asunder, is obviously a reference to man and woman as they come together. But in the world of philosophy, in the world of theology, we will try to make the point that truth hangs together in a very similar way. And in our appreciation of the very aspects of what is true, we shouldn't pit them against each other to say this aspect. Oh, there you go. Thank you very much, man. Appreciate that. So let's just dive. Right in, because I have to pull up. Let me see here. Where am I going? Okay, here we go. This is let me read to you the eight concepts, eight words. We can call them virtues. We can call them mostly emotions, but they are again taken from Divine Renovation. Divine Renovation. first word is hope. What do we hope for? A very important concept. It's one of our theological virtues, right? Faith, hope, and charity. And the following quotes that I'm going to share with you are meant to try to point us in the right direction for the future of the church. Okay? It's that time for our first break already, Nick? Okay, let me just say these eight words and we'll come right back. First, there's hope. Then we need to understand frustration. Then we will consider angst. It's a little more guttural type emotion. It means a lot of things, I guess. Then there is curiosity. Curiosity, obviously a big part of life in many ways. Then we have to consider gratitude. Gratitude, what are we thankful for? And then we must consider trust. Trust, who do we trust? How is faith tied to trust? It's almost a synonymous word, obviously. Then there is joy and inspiration. Okay, so those are our seven words, and we're going to enter into a dialogue with Father Mallon, and what I'm hopefully going to help you with is to appreciate some of the jewels, but also raise some red flags, because there are red flags, and there are what I'm going to call false dichotomies. Someone is trying to split apart what should be united. Someone is trying to split asunder what God has joined together in the realm and in the area of a philosophy of truth, of ideas. Okay? Well, stay tuned, my friends. I'll be right back. This is Father Tom Coyes sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the Donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Hello, I'm Father Thomas Loya, and I'm inviting you to a special observance of the 50th anniversary of Pope Paul VI's Humanae Vitae.
Tuesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. in the St. Mary Parish Hall, 19515 115th Avenue in Mokena, Illinois. Humanae Vitae 50 Years is open to all and proudly sponsored by Two Hearts Catholic Gifts and Books. Hear Father Loya help us discover the truth and beauty in this prophetic writing of Pope Paul VI. Join Father Loya for Humanae Vitae 50 Years at St. Mary Parish Hall, 19515 115th Avenue in Mokena, Illinois, Tuesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyes here with you, trying to wrinkle your brain and trying to lead you through some a philosophical conversation with Father Mallon, who is the author of a very popular book that many in the Catholic Church are trying to apply to our parish lives so that we can have a more rosy and a better future. Since such is not always assumed that we are heading in that direction. So the first thing I would like to say is that these eight topics, call them emotions or virtues, one thing or another. But anyways, The first one I'm going to dialogue with him on is the idea of hope. Obviously, anytime we look to the future and anytime we're trying to better the future, there is the need for the virtue of hope. That's why it's included in those theological virtues. Remember, there's faith, hope, and charity, right? But here's in his chapter, here's one of the more key elements. And now I'm going to read to you how it's written. And I have to confess to you, I'm not exactly sure why this particular quote relates to the virtue of hope, but here it is anyways. This is this question for us in church life. He says, do people in your parish speak about a relationship with Jesus, or is it simply an intellectual knowledge about Jesus? Okay? So that's, I guess what he's hoping for is to move people from the simple intellectual knowledge about Jesus to a relationship with Jesus. Like, what else can he? I don't think he's hoping that we do away with a relationship with Jesus in favor of the intellectual knowledge about Jesus. So I know there is room for this. I often have said that us Catholics, we kind of owe a debt of gratitude to our Protestant brothers and sisters for putting the idea, if you can, I'm going to call it an idea because that's what it is, but it's often put in contrast to an idea, putting the idea of a relationship with Jesus before our mind's eye, or the eye of our mind, one way or another. It is, of course, very possible to learn stuff about Jesus without thinking that you have a relationship with Jesus. I said the other day in a sermon that I didn't verbalize my relationship with Jesus throughout my life in terms of the phrase, I have a relationship with Jesus. But I do remember when I was young, and it really was a major part of my growth in the faith and eventually the desire to be a priest. I remember feeling sorry for Jesus. Do you ever feel sorry for Jesus? If you feel sorry for Jesus, then you could be sure that you have a relationship with Jesus. It's kind of goes hand in hand, even though you may not call it that. And anybody who has ever...
Whoa.
Yeah, there you go.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That should wrinkle your brain. And one of the key ways that we can indeed develop a relationship with Jesus vis-a-vis our feeling sorry for him is by praying the Stations of the Cross, right? Yes, right. It's hard to listen to the Stations of the Cross without starting to feel sorry for our Lord who suffered so much for us. So there's so much wisdom in that beautiful, pious devotion of praying the Stations of the Cross, which unfortunately, since Vatican II, has almost been wiped away. You get a little bit in Lent, and many of the modern versions of the Stations of the Cross seem to distract or remove the focus from just a simple feeling sorry for the suffering that Jesus went through for the world to, am I doing as good as I should be in life? Anyways, there are my favorite Station of the Cross is still the Alphonsus Liguori Stations of the Cross that we do use at our parish. But I remember at one of my parishes before I was a pastor and I had more to say, but when I didn't have that much to say about what we were going to use, I suggested the Alphonsus Liguori Stations of the Cross and was met with a, oh my goodness, no, we can't use those old-fashioned Stations of the Cross. So we use newer modern Stations of the Cross. to which I obediently led the people in prayer. And they weren't bad, but to be perfectly honest, they didn't, in my heart and soul, engender or build up that feeling sorry for the Lord as it should. So anyways, if Father Mallon is saying that he wants people to have a relationship with Jesus, I'm all for that. And if we owe a debt of gratitude to Protestants for making that a usable term, I'm not going to argue that point either. I'll tip my hat and give credit where credit is due, of course. However, the way this is stated here, this is where we got to put on our philosophical thinking caps, okay, my friends? When he says, do people in your parish speak about a relationship with Jesus, or is it simply an intellectual knowledge about Jesus? Now, when analyzing comments and analysis in general, no matter what it is, pay special attention to adverbs and adjectives because they're kind of like the Jedi mind trick. They're trying to push you to think of something in a different way. If I say it is simply an intellectual knowledge about Jesus, it certainly is kind of like a slam.
Let me see your identification.
There we go. There's
you
our
don't
Jedi.
Need to see his identification.
He's a Obi-Wan
we don't
Kenobi.
Need to see his identification.
You never
These
know.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Very good.
Move along.
So. The wisdom of Star Trek finds its way into the winds of change. It's always about us. And so what I'm trying to say to you now is that there's this dichotomy that is being created, which is a false dichotomy. I don't believe the virtue of a relationship with Jesus should be pitted against our quest to know as much. Star Wars. What did I say again? Did I say Star Trek? Nick is right on the money there. Do I deserve the punishment room for that? I don't know. Please, let's keep that closed next time. If I do another one, I'll go put myself in the punishment room. But okay, so Star Wars, that's right. But can you see?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either right now. But listen here again. Do people in your parish speak about a relationship with Jesus, or is it simply an intellectual knowledge about Jesus? As if people in my parish have the fullness of the knowledge about Jesus that the Catholic Church does contain and profess and try to share. I find 95% of the people that fill up our pews probably couldn't explain the hypostatic union or the very basic problem of Arianism that almost destroyed the church in the early days. There is, especially when you include in your intellectual knowledge about Jesus, the fact that he is the second person of the Blessed Trinity, God himself incarnate, suffering and dying for us with his human nature and divine nature, fully human and fully divine. If you include those, most people don't have that depth of knowledge about who Jesus is. Do they know his name? Yes, of course. And so in my book, and here's where I think Father Mallon is doing a disservice to our present attempts to renovate the church by pitting the quest to have as much knowledge about Jesus against a relationship with Jesus creates the dichotomy between feeling and reason, or the feeling and thought, because the relationship with Jesus can be, of course, very beautiful, can be very profound, but it also can be very emotional. And there are many, many, many people who declare they have a relationship with Jesus, but their knowledge of who Jesus is quite faulty if you really take theology seriously and analyze the many questions that have come up about Jesus throughout history. And or especially in light of our present scandals in the church today, I think almost every one of the priests, bishops, or cardinals.
Lord,
look at, here
such
we go.
Destruction.
Now, there we are in the midst of, unfortunately, this destructive situation in the world today. But any person who, especially a priest, a bishop, or a cardinal, who is involved in some of these abusive relationships that are hurting, they would most likely declare that they do have a relationship with Jesus, right? Right. They would certainly say they do, as Martin Luther and John Zwingli and all the quote-unquote reformers proclaimed very loudly that they had a relationship with Jesus. But if intellectual pursuits about who Jesus is that part of our faith is relegated to a secondary level, is pushed to the side, then we are doing the church a disfavor. Okay, so that's point one. We're going to, oh my goodness, the hour's flying by. Let's take another break, and the next emotion we're going to get to is frustration. Frustration. That should be a good one. I'll be right back. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
On Saturday night, October 6th, from 7 until 9, at St. Stanislaus Kostka, Father Angel Espinoza will give a special talk on the urgent need to train your children in the seven fields of true education. The talk will be in Spanish. Here's Cristina to tell you more.
El sábado 6 de octubre de 2018, en las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, la parroquia de San Estanislao Kostka y el Padre Ángel Espinoza los invitan a una conferencia sobre cómo les estamos enseñando a nuestros hijos la fe. ¿Estamos enseñando la fe popular y nada más por encima? ¿O realmente estamos enseñándoles a vivir la fe de una manera profunda, a practicarla diariamente en su vida? Regístrate y compra tu boleto de $30 en la página del web www.stanschurch.org. El cupo es limitado, solo se venderán 5 boletos por persona. Para más información, favor de llamar a la parroquia al 773-278-2470. De nuevo, 773-278-2470. De nuevo, el sábado 6 de octubre del 2018, de las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, en la iglesia de San Estanislao Kostka, ubicada al 1327 Norte de la Noble, en Chicago. Los esperamos.
For complete information and ticket purchase information, go to ststanschurch.org. And click on the Events tab.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Please join in praying a rosary for our nation by joining in Rosary Coast to Coast Saturday, October 7th at 3 p.m. at the Access Health Center, 1700 75th Street, in Downers Grove, Illinois. For more information, see rosarycoasttocoast.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Well, I made it through half the show without being put in the punishment room, even though I was close just a little bit ago, but I think we'll get through the rest of the show. You never know what's going to, how the winds of change will wrinkle your brain or give you some inspiration. Okay, I'm having a dialogue with Father Mallon, the author of a book called Divine Renovation. I'm trying to share some of the bits of wisdom that he's trying to share. But I'll repeat what I said a little bit earlier. I feel a little bit like an older brother trying to pat a younger brother on the back and saying, yeah, you're on to something here. However, listen, my friend, there's some mistakes you're making. You're bound. You have to watch out for X, Y, and Z. So now I want to just talk about X, Y, and Z. So the next word that we're asked to reflect upon on his meditations is frustration. Frustration, something that is pretty universal, is it not? Yeah, of course it is. And he's trying to help those who may be frustrated with the way the church is going. He's trying to tap into that. He's trying to name the frustration. He's trying to allow us to own a certain amount of frustration, as it were. And he's trying to then explain where the root of the frustration comes. Now, here's how he writes it, and I think my comment following may be obvious, maybe it won't be, but he says, the root of the church's sickness is our deep forgetfulness of our deepest identity, that we are missionaries. And again, I will applaud him for pointing us in the direction of who we are. Losing our identity is a very great tragedy. It can be a sign of a malaise in a very strong way. But my critique of this aspect of his teachings is that it's so general as to be almost meaningless. to say we've lost our identity as missionaries is maybe pointing us in the direction of asking what is a missionary and who can be a missionary, and then we gotta analyze that. The frustration that I think a lot of church people feel, and I'm going to speak very candidly as a church person, as namely a pastor, and oftentimes a frustration that we have is we look at our congregation, we look at the congregation before us, and this is true not only for the pastor who looks out at the congregation before them, but every leader, like a Knights of Columbus officer, a Holy Name Society president, or Altar and Rosary Society, or anyone neo-catechumenal way, they have the responsibles. There's all sorts of different leadership positions within the church. And one of the common frustrations, they look out over the general congregation, and obviously we say things like, only a small percentage of the people is involved as we want them to be. Or when you plan an event and you ask for volunteers, you always get the same volunteers, right? There's that common frustration. And I think Father Mallon is trying to corral that, or trying to touch on that. By saying now, especially in the present time, that the root of the church's sickness is a forgetfulness of our identity, without naming this, the scandals that are rocking the church to the core, which are in many other circles being pointed to as fundamentally rocking the church to its core, as was the Eastern-Western Schism, as was the Protestant Reformation, the collapse of the Roman Empire. As a matter of fact, there's a beautiful article by Father Rutler, the great convert, the guy who started First Things, a very high-powered, shall we say, intellectual Catholic magazine, though it has many authors besides Catholic authors. Anyways, he was saying that the present scandals that we're facing are kind of like keeping up with the tradition that every 500 years the church has to face a tremendous, huge problem. He's likening this present scandal, a moral rot that has infected our church, even up to the hierarchy. That's something that's been hurting me. It's been wrinkling my brain quite a bit, and that is the back in 2002, we had a lot of the problems that were coming out.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, and my brain gets wrinkled too. And now we're getting another tsunami, but this tsunami hurts more because we're finding out, and I always wanted to deny it, and I always was trying to give the benefit of the doubt, but now it's like, ooh, maybe I was being too kind. I was being too forgiving in the sense. I was thinking the homosexual clergy that were a part of diocesan bureaucracies, as it were, or even in the lives of bishops and archbishops and cardinals, it's a deeper wound. It's a deeper problem, and I think that's why we're experiencing the frustration, and it's related. I'll say this to Father Mallon: it may be related to a forgetfulness of our identity. You could say it's forgetfulness of the priest or the cardinal or the bishop, his forgetfulness of who he was. That's certainly true, but it just doesn't. To call upon all people to be missionaries is a noble message, and yet I can't help but think that something a wonderful friend of mine who was very successful in business, I think of this quite often, and Dave, if you're out there listening to me, I give you credit for this insight. You say, you know, in business, he found himself able to negotiate the wheels of business and the inner machinations of the business world by keeping something in mind about the population in general, namely that you got to remind that the 3% of the people are really in charge, and then 17% are kind of the other in charge, the middle management workers. Then you got 60% of people that are trying their best, but don't get into leadership. They don't. They never will. You just got to accept the fact that this vast chunk of people are not going to be the, shall we say, the leaders of the business world. They're going to be followers. They need to have a job. They need to be taken care of, and they want to come home to their families and have nice vacations and watch football at night, and thank you very much. I'll have a nice day. Don't bother me with leadership, as it were. And then the bottom 20%, shall we say, are the nasty, really bad people that you really have to avoid and will try to destroy what you're trying to build up in your business. And maybe even the the bottom three reflects the top three. If there are the top 3% of the people that are really in charge, there's a bottom three that are really trying to destroy. As a matter of fact, Immanuel Kant, let me throw this out. Here's a little philosophy. Immanuel Kant, who is known as one of the principal voices and minds of the modern world, he's famous for something, and I'm going to say it this way. He was able, dismantling the classic Aristotelian view of the human race. And what I mean by that is Aristotle, when he would describe his philosophy, his morality, and all the rest, he would keep before our mind's eye something similar to what my business friend was saying about the 3%, the 70%, the 60%, and the bottom percent. Aristotle would say you get a small percentage at the top of truly virtuous people, which means they know what's right, they know what's good, and they do it out of a sense of a love for the good, and it makes them happy. But that's only a small percentage of the top, the real virtuous. Then you got the next group, that is people trying to do good, but they have to fight against the desire to do bad, and sometimes they do bad, and sometimes they do good, but they're basically on the side of good. And sometimes they're happy. They do good out of a sense of duty or obligation more than a sense of it makes me happy. Then you get a large amount of people, let's say the bottom of 25% at the top, 75% down, 25%, 25%, 25%, 25%. So the third 25% down are bad people who they know what's good and they know it's bad and they're struggling to do good, and but they often do bad. The bad often carries the day, even though they're not pure evil. Then you got the lowest level of human beings that are really, truly evil. And by evil, Aristotle meant they know it's wrong and they delight in doing it because they have this warped understanding of what evil is. They like evil because they have this sense of it's tearing down. It's tearing down people, and they wallow in it. So anyways, Immanuel Kant, in the beginning of the modern age, he said, now there's no such thing as these four categories. There's really only two categories, and those are the good people who know what's right, and they sometimes do right, they sometimes do wrong. But there's no such thing as a real virtuous person. Everyone, even who looks virtuous and does virtuous, is indeed struggling against the vices that are planted in his heart. And the good that they're doing is a struggle. And we need to just accept the fact that there are no truly virtuous people. And I think he's saying that because the bottom half, it works for the bottom half as well. There's no real, truly evil people. There's just people who struggle, but mostly fall. we hear this a lot. I hear this a lot when we hear about terrorist attacks and what have you. And we say, this is just pure evil. Or a person who goes into a school and starts shooting up teenagers or wherever, and we say, this is pure evil. And it reminds us of this Aristotelian way of looking at society, of looking at human beings. And it reminds me, because I remember reading about Immanuel Kant, and it reminds me of the teaching of Immanuel Kant, which is a basis of the modern way of thinking, and that is that he did away with the reality of a truly virtuous person and a truly vicious person. So there's only good people who do good but want to do bad, and they struggle, and there's really no such thing as a bad person, but they just do bad because they're struggling with it. Okay? So anyways, I bring that up in the context of Father Malin's words regarding frustration.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that is a brain wrinkler. So he's tapping into this frustration that many leaders in the church have, but here's the problem: leaders in the church have to accept the fact that this principle that's real in business and it's real from Aristotle's form in terms of virtues and leadership and all that, that a great many of the people that are in church are not going to be the leaders, and it's silly to try to make everyone a leader. You need good, strong leaders who are able to deal with people. I have to confess that this revelation, this insight came to me as a way to confront my frustrations. Okay, I look at the congregation. You know how priests look at the congregation. We get mad because everybody sits in the back and nobody wants to sit up in front. We get mad because when the ushers want to ask somebody to bring up the gifts, nobody wants to bring up the gifts. We get mad because when we try to get CCD teachers, nobody wants to teach CCD. When you look for people to clean up after a party, everybody goes home and nobody stays after to clean up after a party. On and on and on. And that is a frustration. But the wise leader recognizes that that's a part of reality and be mature enough to accept it, okay? Now, with a little time left, we're not going to get through my 8 points, but here's the next one is his sense of angst. He says there's this sense of angst to worry what's going to happen. And again, I think he's tapping into the fear that he knows is out there. And he's trying to give confidence in that sense. But here's how he tries to alleviate our angst. He says, to rebuild the church, we need to clear out the junk, particularly Pelagianism. Okay, now that's a heresy of old, and I'm going to try to explain a little better than, well, here's how he says. Clear out the junk. He thinks that Pelagianism is part of the junk that is fully operational in the church today. What is it? He says, it can be defined in two ways. One is a Catholic who sees Christian life as a kind of scorecard for salvation. A Catholic who sees Christian life as a kind of scorecard for salvation. That's his definition of Pelagianism. I think he's a little off, but I sense what he's trying to say. It's possible that you are not trying to be the virtuous follower of Christ for pure reasons. You're doing it because you're obligated to do it. That's the scorecard look. And again, in context of what I just said about the classic understanding of people from Aristotle and the modern understanding of people from Immanuel Kant, this makes even more sense, okay? Because I'm going to say to you that this is, here's the false dichotomy that he's creating here is to set up the sense of obligation or doing what's right, not for the most pure motivations, but because of a sense of obligation, is the enemy of building the church. He goes on to say, a second definition of Pelagianism is the Catholic who bases his or her understanding of grace and salvation not on Scripture or the teaching of the church, but on his or her sense of absolute autonomy and fundamental niceness. Now, a wise philosopher, one of my wise philosophy teachers, of happy memory, used to say, if you hear some explanation with so many words that you have to say, what the heck are they saying? You probably are wiser than the person saying it. And I'm tempted to say that about Father Malin here when he says, a Pelagian Catholic is someone who has a sense of his or her absolute autonomy and fundamental niceness. What I think he's saying is that the classic Catholic who says, I didn't kill anybody and I didn't rob any banks, so that means I'm not going to hell. I don't have to go to confession. I don't even have to go to church. As long as I'm a nice person, I'm doing fine. And in that, he's tapping into something of real consequence, and I see some wisdom. But that's not the person who does good for less than perfect motivations is not the heart of our problem. Do we want people to do good for the right reasons? Yes, of course. But let us accept the fact that doing good for obligation or out of habit or routine, he's pitting the sense of doing something out of habit. Again, going back to the scorecard, I'm doing it because I want to get to heaven, let us say. I'll take a congregation full of people doing what's right over a desire to get to heaven over a congregation that, I'll say it this way. I'll never have a congregation where there is 100% of people that are doing every good thing for every perfect motivation. And I think it's wrong to use Pelagianism as this an example of what is going on. Pelagianism is not doing what's right out of a sense of obligation. Pelagianism is the thought that you don't need grace to get to heaven. We can be good enough on our own. And that's where the example of the young man or teenager or even adult who says, I didn't rob any banks and I didn't kill anybody, therefore I don't need church and I'm sure I'm going to heaven. Or the classic modern incarnation of Pelagianism can be most clearly found in what is known as liberation theology. That's why Pope John Paul II criticized and spoke against liberation theology. Liberation theology is very close to communism in the sense that it is the people who will work together, form the right kind of government, and poverty and injustice and dysfunctional families and all the rest will be eliminated. And you don't need God's grace for that. That's a more classic definition of Pelagianism. So I'm glad that Father Mallon is citing this classic heresy. At least it means he does not stand on the side of those who deny that there any heresies exist at all. But this Pelagian classically defined is that heresy that declares people don't need grace to be saved. And that's not the same as pointing out the badness of someone doing the good out of a sense of duty. We just scratched the surface here, but I hope I'm helping unravel some of the confusion that's going on today. Thank you for listening. I'm Father Tom Coyes. This is Listener Support, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide.